Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
So, Ramona, before we get back into the pandemic media bubble thing,
yeah,
shots. I'm thinking some cracks are beginning to show in this whole Astros cheating scandal.
Yeah,
Carlos Beltran was talking to ESPN's Marley Rivera and kind of went off. There's been a narrative out there of what happened. This is quoting from Alex Cora. Ever since mid-November until the commissioner announced the results of the Red Sox investigation, I've read many things that are true and many others that are not. Out of this whole process, there is one thing that I completely reject and disagree with is people within the Astros organization singling me out, particularly Jeff Luhnow, former general manager, as if I was the sole mastermind. The commissioner's report sort of explained in its own way what happened. But Astros players have spoken up and refuted any allegations that I was solely responsible. Rob Manfred went through this whole, production of like, we investigated top and bottom, all this. How much more do you think is going to come out, like, as players like, and you know, management like Alex Cora absorb the consequences of this?
I think that this was a fascinating story to me because I've been waiting for someone to say that, for somebody involved in this to say that this whole time, which is like we talked a lot about in the Astros scandal, like the code, you know, none of the players supposedly are going to get prosecuted or, you know, have any punishments to them because baseball basically gave them immunity so that they would break the code. Because before that, everybody was denying it. They wouldn't really tell the truth about what happened, but baseball said, okay, tell us what happened. We'll just guarantee you that you're not going to be punished. We're giving you immunity. And that's why all the managers kind of went down in this and the front office guys went down. But, thus far, most people's apologies have basically been, I'm really sorry. That was a mistake. I hope I can get back in the game someday. I know whatever they've said, right? I thought AJ Hinch had probably the best apology. Beltran had a great apology eventually. But I was waiting for one of them to say like, yo, maybe we were all in on it. Maybe we were the ones doing this, but the players participated. They were into it, you know? And I know that they don't want to break the quote, the code. You don't want to be labeled a cheater and a code breaker, right? Like you're violating trust within the clubhouse and locker room.
Snitches get stitches.
Yeah. But that's the truth, man. Like the Alex Cora just told the truth, which is what we should actually be after here. And just because the players got immunity doesn't mean their reputations get to stay intact. They may not be getting punished for this, but they probably should be. And the only way they're getting punished is with their reputations. And then, you know, the pandemic hit and everybody stopped talking about it. But I'm glad Alex finally said that because come on, man. Of course it was not just them.
So what do you think? What happens if more information comes out? And after the baseball has already done its deal and they've laid down the law and they've said they've investigated everything. If we learn more that certain players, then what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's baseball would love nothing more than to just forget this whole thing ever happened. Right. To just turn the corner. Let's just focus. I mean, the pandemic gave them this cover for it. Otherwise, we've just been talking about that.
Maybe that's what's behind not being able to come to any kind of labor agreement. That's the ultimate way to get people to stop talking about the Astros.
Yeah. I mean, it's
just don't play.
It was going to be pretty intense. And so I think I think there's going to be more that comes out here, but nobody in baseball wants to go back and relitigate this. Everybody just wants to move on. Just nothing to see here. Go ahead and throw and hit you can hit some batters on the Astros when we eventually start playing, but let's just move on. I think we live in 2020, Brian, and there's going to be people who talk, people who leak stuff, people who have regrets. There's going to be more coming out just the same way this story broke in the first place. Right. It was a bullpen pitcher who didn't really, who kind of felt ostracized, who finally just said, this was really wrong. Somebody needs to say something. There's a lot more of those guys out there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it's one of these things that when the dam kind of breaks, it really breaks because nobody wants to be the last guy kind of on, the preserving the, you know, the honor code island. Yeah. You know, once everybody jumps off, they all got to jump off. So I am curious to see what happens there. Speaking of 2020 and signs of the times, with this pandemic bubble, part of the reason that, you know, there are no rules, like where the NBA is not going to sit there and put like leg monitors on everybody and or GPS trackers and they don't really need to. I think they understand they don't need to. First of all, the social pressure from within a team, particularly teams that have a lot to play for, is going to be tremendous. Like, do not be the guy who screws this up for us. Do not be the guy who has to go into quarantine for 10 days or 2 days or 3 days because we're worried you might have picked up coronavirus at a club, you know, because you just couldn't stay on property. The same, like, you don't have to do anything if you're the NBA, because the minute an NBA player appears anywhere outside Disney World, somebody's going to take a picture and it's going to be all over the internet.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The same holds true for anybody who's covering it, anybody who's working the event, anybody who's... So how concerned do you think the NBA is in, like, support staff, in media, in all that? Like, if you show up, by the way, if you're supposed to be inside the bubble, you're a famous enough person. If you go out to a restaurant outside the bubble, your picture is going to be taken, too. Like, they'll know. People will know.
People will know. And I think that's what's interesting about the media side of this. And there's a lot of other stat, and is that there's tier one and tier two. So I think tier two, you can go outside. It's like you're not going to be allowed to get close to any players or coaches or anybody for interviews. But you could theoretically sit in the stands of the arenas and you could watch and you could just kind of be there. I think you could probably do live shots from outside. You can do things like that. So you're kind of there. You're observing from afar. You're just not close enough to talk to anybody. And you could go stay outside at the Orlando Marriott. You could go to Disney World if you want. You can ride some rides. You can go out to a, you know, what restaurants do they have down in Florida that are just Florida restaurants? I don't know. I'm sure there's a
TGI Fridays. Yeah. There's probably a Chili's somewhere.
A lot of Chili's. I've spent some time in Orlando.
Stop that for a second, but back up for a second. There's an incredible irony to the idea that the people in Tier 2 who are not part of the bubble actually get to go to Disney World, and the people who are forced to live at Disney World for maybe 3 months actually can't.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be crazy fun. Like, usually when we go to the playoffs, the finals, the conference finals, where there's a lot of other media there and, you know, so much media, there's generally a group of, you know, 20, 30 national reporters from different outlets that tend to be there every single year. Okay. You know their names, right? There's Sam Amick and there's Joe Varden, right? There's Windhorse, there's Dave, you know, there's a lot of us who tend to see each other every year during the playoffs because we live all over the country, but we travel, and it's kind of fun. I mean, it's like life. I mean, being a beat writer is fun too, but there's less media that you see all the time. It's not you just hang out with just the people who cover the Lakers and travel with them, or just the people who cover the Clippers. And there's just the same five people who travel, or maybe 10, maybe it's 10. Okay. But the finals are kind of fun. You go, you know, people are always organizing dinners and we have staff events. It's a big social
media
thing.
Media show. I was about to say it's social and it's networking. You show up for the same reason people go to, like, the Sloan Conference now.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same kind of deal. That's where you want to be at the finals, because you're going to see everybody who works in media there.
That's right. And so I think that's where we are. I mean, I think that it's not going to be that at all. We are not – this isn't going to be fun. Like, if you're one of the – I don't – let's pick a number, 20 media who is going to be in Tier 1 that's covering this day to day, that's living there, you're not hanging out and going to dinners every day. And even if you are – it's the same people you're seeing every day. Like, there's no variety. There's no, like, oh, let's check out this new Italian place. Oh, let's check out this new Chinese place. I hear it's great. Like, there's none of that. There's the restaurant at the hotel or room service every day for 3 months. It's going to be pretty boring.
Like, it sounds awful. Like,
go back to your room. Yeah.
The play, and I realize, you know, woe is me, media, and all this sort of stuff, but, like, okay. Think about this for a second. It's not going to be significantly better for the players. Like, they get the distraction of practicing. They get the distraction of playing games every other day. I mean, they're going to, I mean, this, look, this is going to be like March Madness for the NBA. It's going to be awesome for people sitting at home.
Yeah.
You're going to get wall to wall basketball. ESPN is going to broadcast as much of it as they can. TNT is going to put every game on that they can. NBA TV, you know, it wouldn't shock me if like ESPN radio just carried every game. Like we've been that start, like it's going to be insane. We're going to go from no sports to 9 hours a day of the NBA. Like we're all going to be twitching on our couches because we're like overstimulated with the NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not going to be the experience be like. For people who are, it's going to be awesome. I'm very much looking forward to it.
No, it's very much going to be like Big Brother. This is going to be, I mean, in a way it's Big Brother, except for Big Brother, they're confined to only hang out with each other. They don't get TV. They don't get any stimulus in
but it's
from the
same,
outside world, right?
It's the same basic thing where when we're having so much fun from the outside, other than the couple hours a day where they might play a game and then they've got, you know, the couple hours of practice or whatever, like it still leaves like 17 hours of the day that they've got to fill. It is going to suck for the players too. Like there's nothing that's going to be fun about this experience for people who actually have to live inside the bubble. I think it's critically important for people to remember.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty isolating. And I think that's why players are kind of like, hey, exactly how is this going to work? Like, when do I get to bring my girlfriend or my wife or my kids? And why is this taking so long? And then the question is, hey, how come these media people get to come in and out? How come they get to come for a week at a time or do tier one and tier two? How come, you know, there may be, let's say they do the broadcast. I think there's going to be sideline reporters there the whole time. I think they're going to have people at every game on the court. But I don't think they're going to be broadcast crews there the whole time. I think maybe just for conference finals and finals. So, like, but are those sideline reporters going to be there the entire time? Are they going to switch out? Are they going to have, you know, George and Izzy Gutierrez there for the first 2 weeks and then they switch out tag team? And, you know, your first week in the bubble, you're going to be in quarantine as they test you. And then you tap, you know, go in and tag, you're in, game on. And like, I don't know how that's going to go, but for the players, they're just going to be there the whole time. And, you know, like, one of the things I always like to talk about is, as you know, yes, they are millionaires. They have lots of resources and all that, but they're still people. They still have families. They're used to giving up a lot of their time and their lives to their sport and dedication to that. But part of the way you get through that is that you have unlimited resources really to make that lifestyle like, okay, it's fun. Right. You go out to dinners, you have fun. You have, you fly your friends in to come see you in whatever city you're in. You have your family come see you. Like none of the ways that NBA players and staffs and coaches have been able to make their travel schedule and life on the road either fun or tolerable or better are going to be available to them here. If anything, it's just
like money does not solve any of the boredom issues that these guys are going to face.
Yeah.
And I realize, look, I mean, you love your teammates. I mean, the Lakers are like the chemistry. We talk about this, the Lakers chemistry. It's so good. And that's true. It is not made up. This is a team that gets along really well. It's a mix of guys, you know, that I think generally speaking are of the same kind of mindset, of generally the same kind of approach to the game. There's a lot of veterans. You know, Alex Caruso is one of the younger players on the team, but has a very veteran kind of feel about him. I mean, really the only guy who you look at on that roster who is kind of a one of these things is not like the other is Kuzma.
Yeah.
But he's also a guy, but he's also very dedicated to being good. You know, he's had a hard season. It hasn't necessarily worked out. I think he's a little overrated in terms of like being that guy who people look at as the third guy on the Lakers, but he's still, that doesn't mean he's not trying.
Right.
And so, you know, like, but that doesn't mean like you spend 3 months around these guys where they're the only people you see that will test any team's chemistry. I don't care how good you get along. That is not easy. It's because you can go home and see your family and see other people and see friends and all that. And then you hang out on the road with your teammates or that, you go to a movie or that's not a choice either. Maybe I don't know how they're going to do any of this stuff. It is going to be brutal on these players, even the ones who get along with each other.
And I think that's what the reality that's been setting in. I think the more they've talked about it, you know, you talk about playing again, you talk about, you know, getting back and finishing the season, competing for a championship, but now the reality gets down to it of like what this is really going to be like. And I've been saying the whole time that I think I can do a better job reporting from my house than I could from Orlando. Like if we took out all of the familial concerns that I would have about going, I would love to go to just experience the scene and the strangeness of it all. And then you write some great scene stories.
Let's be honest, Ramona, even if it was just, I'm leaving, not leaving Daniel behind. I'm just leaving Devin for a few weeks.
Yeah. Well, a few weeks is different than a few months.
That's true. But a few weeks, a few months, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'll leave out some food.
Nev will be okay. Yeah, Nev will be fine.
A couple hundred bucks on the kitchen counter. He'll be okay.
Yeah, he's got a Nintendo Switch. He's got Netflix, Hulu, YouTube. He's got all the good stuff.
How's Nevin? He's got Hulu. He's fine.
He's cool. There's lots of streaming options. He's great. We got Postmates. You don't have to go anywhere. You know?
That's right. He'll be okay.
He'll be okay. Instacart's working way better than it used to. I mean, my husband is a very simple person to please. Like, I order him some mint chip ice cream every week, and he's good. Like, as long as he can have the mint chip ice cream, he's a happy guy, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. This is, like, one of the reasons I married him. He's not complicated in terms of, like, little things that you can do to, like, make him happy. Hey, guess what I got you? He's like, mint chip ice cream? Yes. And if it's not mint chip, peanut butter chocolate chip ice cream, some kind of like peanut buttery ice cream. Oh, he's happy. Good.
Cheap date.
Wow. Yeah.
Father's Day's coming around. What kind of ice cream do you want?
Yeah, I mean, literally. Okay, this is the sad part about we get so many packages now because I just order Amazon all the time and I order Instacart and all that other stuff. I ordered his Father's Day gift early for me, which is a big deal. Like, I remembered and everything, but he just opened it along with everything else. And what I had got him was, you know, like a shirt where Nevin's shirt says taco and Daniel's shirt says taquito. And then I got another one where his shirt said Maverick and Daniel's shirt says goose. And I was like, see, here's your Father's Day. Isn't that so cute? You got like matching shirts with your son. Okay. Well, all of a sudden, one day I wake up in the morning and Daniel's wearing the taquito shirt. And I was like, wait, where did you get that? That was your Father's Day present. He was like, oh, I saw it in the mail yesterday. I just opened it up and put it on him. I'm like, oh, well, do I still have to get you something extra now?
Like, mint chip ice cream. It just means you need to get him some mint chip ice cream at the end of the month and it's all good. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right, Ramona, we're going to get back to basketball here in like 20 minutes with Kendrick Perkins, who's going to join us at 4:30. Next, though, there is a guy in sports, a sportsman, who has chosen a very questionable hill to die on. We'll explain that next. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne in for Mason Nyland, 710 ESPN. Ramona Shelburne and Brian Kamenetsky in for the guys, 710 ESPN. Ramona, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
The last time I saw you I saw you in your car, I believe you were sleeping in it.
This is at
the facility where you're just taking a nap.
You and your brother were such jerks. I was like, I'm really tired, okay? And you're like banging on my window. Hey, Momo.
Wait. What were we like?
Hi, Momo.
That's pretty spot on.
Yeah.
I do believe, actually, you have gotten a new car since then. Like, you have changed cars. That was the old car. No?
Nope. Same car. Like, I drive a Honda Accord.
It's not just a Honda Accord. What year?
I believe this is a 2015.
Oh, see, I was thinking of the older Accord.
Oh, the older one. Yeah, that was 2003.
Right.
Yeah, that was old.
Right.
Yeah.
And you got a new one. For a second, I thought you were like Kawhi Leonard. Like, you just drive the same truck.
Okay.
You and LL Cool J and Kawhi Leonard. But so like you have you're driving the 2015 very sensible car. Do you need a new truck, Ramona? Would you like a truck that goes Nevin like a truck that drives real fast? Would you like one of those?
Okay, sure. I think you're leading me towards something. Yeah, that sounds fun.
I sure am. Because there's a guy named Ray Ciccarelli. Ciccarelli, okay. I don't know.
Just say Ray.
Ray, a NASCAR Truck Series driver who, in the wake of the NASCAR announcement that they are banning Confederate flags from the track. Like, you can't fly on a car. Yeah. You can't fly in the stands. Like, no more Confederate flags. He took to Facebook on Wednesday to announce that he, it's been fun. It's been a dream come true to race in the NASCAR Truck Series, but he's not going to be part of any NASCAR that doesn't allow you to fly the Confederate flag. Quote this from his post: "I don't believe in kneeling during anthem nor taking people right to fly whatever flag they love." He posted.
Okay.
All right. "I could care less about the Confederate flag. I don't believe you, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them racist. All you're doing is bleep one group to cater to another, and I ain't spend the money that we are to participate in any political BS. So everything is for sale, including presumably the trucks that he drives around real fast on the track." Now, you could argue that this guy might be taking a chance to save some of his money because he has been, what was it, Funchy? You said 50 races and he's never won any of them?
50 races, never won a race, and not even a top three finish.
Okay, so he's apparently not very good at driving this truck very fast. This, to me, and I understand the social implications of NASCAR banning the Confederate flag from events. I think it's as much of a shift as the NFL doing what they did with acknowledging Black Lives Matter and the wrongs towards protests and all that. It might even be more significant in that way because there's one black driver. And as far as I know, like 11 black NASCAR fans, like you are much more risking your audience in NASCAR than you are in the NFL, because the NFL, at the very least, you need your players.
Yeah.
This seemed to me to be a strange hill to die on, even with that. Like, you're going to do it. Maybe I don't get it, but like over the Confederate flag, that's where you're dying.
Yeah. Well, this has come up before in not just NASCAR, but I think in college football too, right? Isn't there one of the Southern states in that then they still fly the Confederate flag?
I think Mississippi. Like, yes.
Yeah. Mississippi, right? Ole Miss. Yeah. It's come up before and there's a lot of pushback, and it comes like people just say, "Hey, this is a regional issue. It means something different down here." I'm like, it means something worse down there, right? Like, I mean, I think it's something that has come up before. There's been pushback. And on this NASCAR thing, I don't hear anyone pushing back. Have you heard anyone pushing back besides this guy? What's his name? Rusty?
No.
What was his name?
Don. Dan.
Ray.
Yeah. Ray Cicciarelli.
Yeah.
Cicciarelli. Okay.
I haven't heard an outcry. Have you heard anybody? Lindsay, have you? I've been reading stuff. I've been trying to find if there's a big pushback on this.
I've heard everyone making fun of him.
Yeah, him. But the NASCAR did what, this is, I think this is a really big thing because
it's huge. There's,
I was just reading a story the other day about what do we do with all the Confederate statues. There's a lot of statues of Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis. There's a lot of statues around this, that have been taken down in recent years. And they're sort of like they're kind of in storage. Like, what do we do with them? And they were the reporter went and said they talked to people in Russia about what they did with a lot of the communist statues that they took down that became sort of no longer on the right side of history type statues. Okay.
Right.
okay. I don't know how else you put that.
No.
But there's, the Confederate flag has been a symbol for a lot of people for different reasons for a lot of years. There are people who feel very strongly that it's not a racist symbol, that it's just a symbol of a way, yes. Southern those, pride. And,
you know what those people are, Ramona? Wrong.
and to me, it's whether it's a symbol to you of something else to a large number of people in the country that have been saying for years, this is a symbol that upsets me greatly. This is a symbol that is basically hearkening back to slavery. This is a symbol that is promoting the time in the South before the Civil War.
That was
when
used
there were
to threaten people in the time after slavery.
That's enough to make it go
post-war
away.
Yes.
Yeah. That is should be enough. And it should have been enough a long time ago. But because of the change in our awareness, climate, the protests, like whatever you want to attribute this to. I'm glad finally, like, there's enough concentrated effort on this as a symbol to where people are like, okay, it's got to go away. And NASCAR is taking a really big stand here. I don't think people realize how big a stand this is.
I think it's important to remember, like, Ryan McGee wrote a great, if you haven't read it, Ryan McGee, and we've tweeted it out, and I'll try to tweet it out again, wrote a spectacularly good and honest and raw column about what this means. It covers NASCAR for ESPN. I understand, you know, people don't want their politics in their sports, and they want, like, we're well past that, I think, as a society.
Yeah.
I think the whole stick to sports thing was never real anyway. But that said, I can do the both sides thing with Colin Kaepernick's kneeling during a game. I will vehemently disagree with somebody who says it's the wrong time. It's this and that and the other. I think as long as you're acknowledging that I get that it's not about the flag. It's not about the anthem. It's not about the military. And you acknowledge what he's protesting. If you say it's ineffective, it's the wrong timing, I still find it disrespectful. I will debate you, but okay, you're being honest and engaging. There is no both sides in the Confederate flag. There just isn't. Like, even if you're willing to remove the slavery part of it and the horrible atrocities and the symbolism and things that were done to blacks in the name of that flag since the war, the logic, like, why are we flying flags and creating monuments for the army that fought against us? Like, that doesn't happen anywhere else. We don't, like, they don't make.
Well, I mean, Brian, I can't understand. Like, this is one of the things that I've tried to, you know, wrap my head around while all the protests have been going on the last couple of weeks. You know, I don't know what it's like to be a black person in this world. I don't. But I do know what it's like to be Jewish. I know what I feel when I see the swastika, or when I see, you know, a lot of my family was killed in the Holocaust. I visited their graves. I've learned a lot about it. I know that I have a very visceral reaction when I see anything Nazi paraphernalia. It's like I get a cold, like the hair on my arm stands up. Like, if somebody even says it, or I see it, or I think it, right? So that is my only frame of empathy or comparison to what it must feel like for a black person to see the Confederate flag, right? That it's a symbol.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's what it represents. And like, when I see that, I'm like, okay, I get why you don't like that. And I don't like it either, but I don't have the same, it's not my connection to it, right? It's a different, I don't know what it is like to be black. But if enough people are telling you this is a horrible symbol to them, just ban it. Make it go away. It should have happened a long time ago, but I'm glad it finally did, because this is it was really important. And I think I think when we look back on this time period, this is going to be one of the most, you know, NASCAR banning the Confederate flag, like, that's going to be one of the most important things that happened in terms of resolution and in terms of societal change of all of this. That's huge.
Yeah, it's strange that we're still litigating.
Yeah.
Confederate flag in 2020, like that. Yeah. It is a very weird thing. It's something that I don't know, that we're still litigating whether or not you should have statues of Braxton Bragg displayed in your public park. Like, I don't understand that. There's a larger conversation about how do you tell the story of George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, or they're like, but like, you can have that conversation because those are people who did other things. Like, you know, these Civil War Confederate generals are known only for being generals on the wrong side of the war. Like, that's it. And you can do more things at once. I think when people, your point about what this means, when you look at the way this has sort of shifted, and I think the voice we see with LeBron James, we'll talk about this maybe with Perk next and certainly afterwards. Like, LeBron's not just talking about Black Lives Matter. He's talking about, now he's now involved in legitimate political movements. This news came out yesterday about voter registration and voter suppression and all these other things. Like, we are so far past athletes, quote unquote, sticking to sports. People just need to put that out of their heads. It was never a true thing to begin with, and it is certainly never going to be a true thing again. So if it makes you too squeamish that NASCAR is taking a stand on the Confederate flag, you're going to be disappointed by a lot of stuff that's coming next. It's just how it's going to be. You know what people won't be disappointed by that's coming next?
Who's that?
Kendrick Perkins. Oh. We're going to talk to Perk about the bubble, Ramona.
I think his new name is Kendrick Hot Take Perkins.
Sit back. He's coming.
He's fun.
That's next. Brian Kipnis, Ramona Shelburne into the guy, 710 ESPN. We're waiting for the arrival of Kendrick Perkins to the show. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, 710 ESPN. John is celebrating his son's graduation today. Steve Mason is taking some well-earned vacation time. We were talking about in the break, like the one good thing, one of the good things about our jobs, and there are some things that aren't so good. It's a tough time in sports media. People may have noticed. Tough time everywhere. We get to talk to a lot of people. Like, we are not nearly as isolated just because of our jobs as other people. Like, I've got, you know, from side work that I'm doing and some other stuff and things I do. Like, I'm doing, you know, late night happy hour. We got into conversations going on there. We're doing the radio show. I do this. Like, we're able to talk to people. And so in that sense, it's kind of nice to do what we do.
You know what I do almost every night? Is I sit there, I think about what stories I'm working on, what news I'm chasing, what I want to look into. And I make a list of about 20 people that I should call the next day. Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe not every night, maybe it's like a couple times a week, and I'll just make a list and I just kind of work my way through it. Cause during the day I'm on such a schedule. I got a couple hours here. I got a couple hours there. And then the rest of the time I'm watching Daniel. I'm going on walks in 95 degree heat. And then I have to lay down cause it's hot out here in the valley. But anyway, I just go down the list and I just start calling people, and it's really nice. It's like, oh, hey, I haven't talked to you. And it's usually an agent or a front office person, a player, or whoever it is, somebody with the union. But it's just nice to check in with people and talk about stuff other than what are we doing in quarantine today? What show are you binge watching? Right. Like, generally, every conversation has something to do with us all being in quarantine. But it's nice to have other adult conversations with people outside my general family unit.
Do you find that people are easier to get a hold of now and more willing to talk to you than they were before?
Yeah, more willing. It's a little, I wouldn't say easier to get a hold of because everybody's on so many Zoom calls. Like, there's so many times, like, you know, the away messages that you have, like when somebody calls you, I have learned how to change my three presets. So it used to just be whatever the standard one that comes with the iPhone. So I changed it to, the first one is driving, call you back. You know, driving, hit you back in a minute. Then I have another one is on the other line. I'll hit you when I can, as soon as I can. And then the last one is, sorry, I can't talk right now. Right.
Right.
Now you have to change it from, I don't really drive anywhere. So I think I should change that one to on a Zoom, hit you when it's over. You know, it's like literally we're all on so many Zooms or group conference calls. Whatever it is, it's kind of hard to like beep in all the time because that's what employers and everybody seems to be doing. Right. And I don't have a great Zoom technique. Are you good at it yet? Have you?
I'm okay. Well, I've been using Zoom for a lot. I have my own account now.
Oh, okay. So I just do it on my phone, and I think that's my step one that I'm bad at. You should do it on the computer. It's always better because then you can see everyone. If you do it on your phone, you kind of can only see like one or two people at a time, and you have to swipe right to see everybody else. But what I do is I sit on my couch in my bedroom, and there's a picture behind me. So it looks like there's a picture of like, it kind of looks like, I don't know, somewhere in the Mediterranean or something. So it's like, no, I'm not in my bedroom. I'm in the Mediterranean because the picture behind me is nice framing. But I'm like holding my phone, and I got, I'm like probably a shaky camera there. It's not great. Yeah.
Ramona.
Yeah.
Perk's here.
Oh, God. Perk? Shut up, Ramona. I want to talk to Perk.
Yeah, well, I mean, I thought when Funch, I thought you heard Mike when he said Perk's on the line. I thought you heard that.
Did not hear that. No.
Okay. Ramona, keep going. I love hearing you talking.
I know. I miss you, Perk.
When you speak in the gospel. Brian, how y'all doing today?
I'm doing good.
Perk, how's your Zoom game? Are you good at the Zoom calls yet?
You know what? I have mastered it. I have
really
like, yeah, first my wife had to do it for me, and then I kind of caught on to it. So it's like, she kept saying, you're just being lazy. And I said, what you mean? Click this link, type in the code, and then type in the password. Here's your video. Press join with video. And here's your mic. Here's your mute button. I said, oh, okay, here we go.
So you were doing it like where you just call in and you're not actually on the video the whole time before?
Well, no, and then they was like, Perk, you're not on the video. Then I have to call her and she would have to stop what she's doing to come help me.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you just got to figure that out. And I think there's for a while, Perk, you were
like a 77-year-old lady. Like, that was your Zoom game.
Yeah. I was literally acting like a senior citizen.
Well, Perk, you are definitely not a senior citizen from the video I saw yesterday with that Phil Handy Skills Challenge.
Oh, you saying it? You know what? I keep telling people it was a mixture of the social media comedian Spice Adams.
Okay.
With a tad bit of Kyrie Irving. Like,
yes.
The body frame was Spice Adams. Because I'm so big, but the handles was like on point, like Kyrie.
I was impressed, I'm telling you. And now that they have 17-person rosters, like, I don't know. Are you in shape? Can you go? Can you go to the bubble?
Absolutely not. No way. Listen, do you understand? I had to do that video about 6 times, and then I had to finally pick one and say, okay, I'm going to do this. And listen, Ramona, and then by the time I finished, so I told my son who was recording, I was like, look, I'm about to go for 30, 45 seconds. I need you to get this.
Yeah.
And I pulled up. I'm thinking, oh, that was about a minute long. So I was like, how long is the video? He was like, 18 seconds. I was like, what? I was like, you know what? That's going to have to do, because no way I could have did that again.
Yep. Well, you pulled it off, man. You look good in that video. I was like, dang, Perk, I didn't even know you had that handle when you were in the game, when you played. You got low.
I'm trying to tell y'all, listen, Doc Rivers, who's my mentor, he made me into a winner, but he messed up me being an all-star. I'm telling you, I was on the verge of being a franchise player. He made me into a role player. We're trying to save my career.
Okay, so now, all right, you're not going to the bubble because you got 18 seconds in you, not 18 games in you. But what's life in that bubble going to be like? I know you talk to guys, like, and I know there's some players right now that are having, I don't want to say second thoughts, but the reality of what life in the bubble is going to be like is starting to hit people. What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, you know, it's that sacrifice, but. It's one thing about being in the bubble that you could get from it if you're a hooper and you want to win. Guess what? The only thing that you could focus on is playing basketball. And then, you know, guys are real close. So at the end of the day, you know, guys play Madden. So they'll be on their video games, which they do anyway all day long. Guys will be playing cards, which they do when we get together anyway. So at the end of the day, yes, it is a sacrifice. Being in a bubble for 3.5 months, but it's not that bad. Like, just think about it. Now they just have more time to spend in the gym. It's just like playing in some of the worst NBA cities where you know, hey, I can't go out on the night of the town because there's nothing to do, so let me just stay in the hotel room and get my rest.
But, okay, so we're talking to Ken.
I just want to know is how to both of you. So Brian and Ramona, I just want to know is how can you pack for 3.5 months?
Interesting. Well,
that is a great question.
I don't think you have to. I don't think there's going to be a lot of housekeeping service. Like they don't want workers going in and out of guys' rooms. But I do think there's going to be something like, I don't know, once every week or two, somebody's going to wash your clothes or send them out for dry cleaning. That should be okay. So I don't think you have to pack. I think you got to pack about 2 weeks worth of clothes. And then I think clothes can be sent to you. Don't you think? Like if you want to have a
Amazon.
Yeah. And well, I don't think there's going to be like a whole, I mean, there's not going to be a fashion walk, right? Like when you walk to the arena now, it's like, that's like the red carpet.
Right. Cause that's what I was going to say. Like you just said it, Perk, like nobody's going anywhere. You can't, you know, like all you need are like 20 days worth of athleisure and you're probably good to go.
You still have those guys, right, that are walking in the arenas and the camera get that shot, who guys who are very prideful about that walk in and want to make a fashion statement, like Russell, Westbrook, James Harden, Braun. Yeah. You know, they want to make their fashion statement. So I'm just trying to see, like, How they're going to do that? I you know.
Okay, so let me tell you about something. I know something you don't know, Perk. Okay. Because
okay,
this is what women have available. This is like the new thing that all the ladies do. There's a service called Rent the Runway. Okay. And my wife loves that. I love it. Yeah. You don't have to go to Bloomingdale's. You don't have to go shopping. You just look online. You type in kind of what you're looking for, and they send you like three or four different looks in your size for whatever event you're going to. And it comes to you. They deliver it to your door. It's like dry cleaned. It's on a nice hanger. And one of those is going to fit okay, right? And that's what you wear to the ESPYs, or that's what you wear to whatever you're going to. A lot of these guys have stylists, right? Can't they just send stuff to them all the time? Just be like, here's five looks for you. Pick out what you want.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But the only problem is that you're dealing with guys that are over 6'5".
Yeah, but they got stylists. They got stylists who pick stuff out for them all the time. They don't need to shop themselves.
Right. No, I agree. Well, I'll tell you what, their stylists are going to be getting raises.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? I mean, you can bring friends and family after like that first round or whatever it is. What about leave your wife and kids at home and just bring your stylist?
That's not happening. There's no way. If you're married, there's no way that your wife is going for that. Leave her at home and bring your stylist.
Yeah, right?
No way. No.
Okay, so Perk, this is the thing I got to ask you, okay? And this is the thing people don't really want to say or talk about or however it is, but 3 months just with a bunch of your teammates and coaches and stuff and not seeing your family. Now, eventually, after a month or two, you're going to be able to see, you know, wife, kids, friends, whatever. But these are grown men here who are not used to having a dry spell like that. Is that a thing? Like not having wife, girlfriend, whoever it is.
She's
around?
Asking the sex question.
Yeah,
it is. It's going to have to be a sacrifice. Listen, Floyd Mayweather does it in boxing, so now we know how he feels. So I mean, it's just going to have to be that sacrifice. But
how long does Floyd go?
I think he goes the whole time he's in training camp. Like,
oh wow!
Before he's training for a fight. Mm. So I mean, it's gonna actually test your mental. But this is why I'm a strong believer that whoever wins the championship, this could possibly be one of the greatest championships of all time, just because of all the adversity that. These guys are gonna have to go through. Think about it, like being in the bubble, being away from their families, dealing with coronavirus, not playing at a neutral site at Disney where AAU games are being played.
Yep.
Everything is different. This is why I think that this might be one of the greatest championships of all time.
I agree with you. I think no home court advantage. 3.5 month layoff in between the end of the regular season and when we restart. Coronavirus, not having your family and friends there, like that is going to be intense. That is, and I think the no home court advantage thing is a big deal. I don't know how you feel about it. I think the best teams are probably still going to win, but no home court advantage is a real issue especially for teams that spent all year trying to get it.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. Think about it. The Philadelphia 76ers, they're at home, they're a title contender. On the road, they're a lottery team. So this is the reason, and you're right, Ramona, because this is why you fight for home court advantage. Think about this. Fans, how many times have we seen post-game interviews where guys have said, man, if it wasn't for the fans in here tonight, we would have won this game. Like, fans help you rally back. Being at home helps you rally back from being down 15, 20 points to winning a basketball game. So I agree with you.
Which teams do you think are hurt most by it? Because I actually think the Lakers are fine. Like, LeBron doesn't care what court he's playing on, all that. But which teams that are contenders do you think get the most from their home court?
Like you said, the Lakers are fine. The Clippers are fine. The Rockets are fine. The team that I think that it might hurt the most would probably be the Milwaukee Bucks. Because if you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, right, and they also had a good road record, But at home, they had a great record, but they were averaging, like, they were beating people by an average of like 13 or 14 points at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about that. That's ridiculous. So I think it's going to hurt them more, because at home it was almost, for the Bucks, it was like you could mark that W in the books, because they were like blowing people out at home. It wasn't even a competition.
I mean, I think it's one of those things where there's not much you can do to make up for the lack of home court advantage. I don't know what I think they're all going to stay at one hotel. I don't think it's even going to be like, okay, the top four teams can stay at the Ritz. Everybody else has got to stay at, you know, the Marriott. It's not, I think there's just one big hotel there that everybody's going to be at. But it's kind of like, you just got to win without any excuses, no matter what, whatever has been thrown your way. Whoever wins this year is going to have overcome all of it. I just hope it's not because of significant injury on another team.
No, I agree. And it's zero excuses, because guess what? You have nothing to do but get better. So at the end of the day, if you're bored, then how about go run? If you're bored, go to the weight room. If you're bored, go to the gym. So you have zero excuses why your basketball game should not be on point. Zero. Mm.
Now, Perk, I know you've been in contact with a lot of players throughout this. I'm curious your reaction to the story with LeBron James yesterday, how he's starting, you know, getting into politics. Like, it's not just talk anymore. He's actually starting a fund to help change things in the political sphere. What are you, were you aware of that before the story came out? Were you talking about it? Are you part of it? What do you know?
Yes, I am part of the power move that LeBron James has made. I think, you know, when you look at it, from his eyes, he was trying to see, okay, yes, we have people out there protesting and standing on the front line. Yes, we have celebrities and people of power that are speaking out. But what's next? How can we change? How can we make change in America? We can't change racism. Racism has been around before our time, and it's going to be around after our time. That's something that we can't change. But what we can change is the system. What we can change are the leaders that are leading America. And how do we do that? By voting. And like when Braun came up, it's bigger than a vote, is a concept basically saying, you know what? Not only are we going to tell people to vote, but we're going to educate people to vote. We're going to show people how to vote. We're going to give them the ins and outs of voting, you know, where they could vote and all this. And so that's a great thing, because, you know, the more people that are educated, especially in the African-American community, the better. And in our community, because they have a lot of people in different cultures who don't really understand or even know the voting system. So I think right now this is very important, because this is something that we all come together to do and vote and make change and have change in the world. We're not going to change racism, but we can change the system and leadership.
That's awesome. And I'm wondering, how did this come about, though? Who got the idea? Who put it all together? You know, I'm sure there was a ton of calls about how you're going to get this to happen.
It was all LeBron James, as usual. Mm. LeBron James, the intelligent human being that he is, He came up with this solution. He called the Zoom meeting and had about over 50, you know, popular athletes and entertainers. Wow. And he addressed it, and he said what it meant, what it was all about, and we all in with him.
Hey, what does it do for the rest of the league, Perk, when LeBron James gets out there, not just, you know, talking about social issues and not, but picking something like this in terms of other guys finding their voice? And maybe you don't quite have the platform of LeBron, but the trend has been in guys recognizing the influence that they have. So how do you think this trickles down to the rest of the league and really the athlete community more broadly?
Well, it's just like what LeBron did in free agency. He taught guys how to control their own situations. Right now, what he's doing in this voting system, he's teaching guys to be confident, and it's okay to speak out. Because one thing about it, we know LeBron James, before he says anything, is well researched and that he's going to be on point about it. So he's letting the younger generation and the younger players know that it's okay to speak out. It's okay to address this issue. And he's been a leader that he's always been.
Perk, last thing for me is do you think the NBA and its players are going to do anything more to protest, to show just, you know, their support for the protesters when we get the games back, you know, when people come back and there's an actual stage? I know there's been some talk about that behind the scenes, like, you know, should they not play? Should there, could there be a gesture? Like, what do you think is going to happen with that?
I think it's going to be – I think they're going to do great in Disney. Just think about it. All of them – all.
Whoa, robot. What's happening?
Wow.
What's happening to your phone?
Somebody doesn't like Perk's answer.
Yeah.
He's getting too close to the truth.
What's happening there? Perk, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You were getting censored somehow. Somebody was censoring you. Did you hear that?
I did hear it.
Oh, okay. So just
like, think about it, right? Like, just imagine an Instagram post where you see LeBron James, Giannis, AD, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, all NBA players, Damian Lillard, all on one Instagram post that's protesting in some type of way with shirts or whatever the case may be. Like, that would be so powerful. And they're going to come up with more and more ideas because they have nothing but time on their hands to protest. And guess what? You can take away everything you want and put them in a bubble. You can't take away their cell phones and you can't take away their social media. So they'll find a way.
Awesome.
All right. Perk, dude, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Love that. You know, just love when you get the chance to do this. And again, congratulations on the handles. That was awesome.
I appreciate it. Anytime. Y'all have a good one and stay safe. All right.
You too, Perk.
You too. All right, Ramona, they've done the math. They've done some math on the bubble. And the headline, it makes it sound like it's not a big deal, and it is. We'll explain how these numbers break down for the Orlando bubble next. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, 710 ESPN. 710 ESPN, Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne in for John and Steve. It sounded like Perk, Lindsay, as you pointed out, was getting a fax during that last conversation.
I know, right?
And
I was like,
and
whoa.
Based on
the robot.
Based on his, like, given what he was saying about his technological capabilities at the beginning of the pandemic, it wouldn't surprise me if Perk still used a fax machine.
Yeah.
It's not out of the question.
No. That is exactly what it sounded like.
I like
either that
asked him, like,
or robots censoring him.
Right. You know, no more politics, guys.
Yeah.
I like when you asked him, like, Perk, would you go play? And he was like, hell no. He strikes me as the kind of guy who, he's like Bill Cowher. Like, Bill, you're going to go back and coach? And he's like, we'll think about it. And spent, like, you know, it was 10 years in the media. Like, you make, like, Perk makes solid money. Like, he's a big deal now on ESPN, and he's got a really great gig. He doesn't really need to go back and be, like, the 17th guy in a pandemic bubble. Like, Perk gets it.
Yeah.
He's living a good life now.
Perk is the greatest example of somebody who – you know, we say now in 2020 is that authenticity sells. It's just people who are authentic and real. It doesn't matter what you look like, what your name is, what your race is. Like, if you're authentic and you're awesome like he is, you're going to be a star. He's just
he's great. And it's so disarming because when Perk played, he was one of those glowering, you know, scowling dudes who, like, never seemed like, you know, like your mom would say, if you keep doing that, your face is going to freeze that way. Like, that was Perk. Like, you didn't want to be like, you weren't sure. Like, can I go interview the guy after the game? And I didn't interact with him much off the court, so I don't know what he was like off the court. But I remember, like, Kenyon Martin, he was scary on the court. Kenyon Martin was scary off the court too. Like, going to post game, like, if they had a bad, you know, whichever team he was on at the time had a tough game or whatever it is, or he didn't play, like, it was genuinely intimidating to interview Kenyon Martin after a game. My understanding is he is a wonderful guy.
Yeah, he's nice. I really like him.
I mean, that's what everybody says.
Like, I had him. He was the Clippers for a little while, so I got to know him. Yeah. And he was out here. I like Ken.
Everybody says that.
Yeah.
Terrifying during his career to have to actually go ask him questions. Charles Oakley, terrifying to go at, like, certain
Maybe
guys.
Maybe for you, Bri. Maybe for you.
Well, not for Ramona Shelburne. I know.
I just walk right up to the really tall guys, and I'm like, hi, I'm Ramona. And I'm just all perky.
It doesn't work as well for me. I can't do that. Hi, I'm Brian.
I just play the, like, you know, perky young, hi, hey, what's up? But, you know, just play that card. Because I think it's real. That's sort of how I am.
No, when you talk about authenticity.
Yeah, it's authenticity.
Like I say, the most useless words in sports radio. Ramona, real quick.
Yeah.
Ramona, we've got a minute. Like, those are not words that matter to Ramona Shelburne when she's being her true self.
Yeah. You have heard me in all sorts of places, Brian. You've heard me on the treadmill. You've heard me talk.
No. It was an elliptical, Ramona.
Elliptical. Yeah, it was the elliptical.
Truth.
That's true. You've heard me do radio from the car. I've definitely called into your Lakers post-game show on my drive home, right?
Yes.
Real late at night or real early in the morning, whatever you want to call it, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever time that was. I feel like I called in. Weren't you there the Kobe's last game? Was that you?
Oh yeah, I was there. Well, yeah, we did the post-game show that day. Yeah,
didn't I call you on the drive home? It was really late.
It was probably, and we were on forever. That was the night where we probably were on until 1 or 2 in the morning. Yeah. But that was one of the most fun,
awesome
post-game things. Yeah. It was just.
I didn't want to go home.
I know.
I didn't want to go home.
No one.
I was in the press room watching the replay of the game with J.A. Adande in the press room watching the 60-point game that we just watched. Like, we all just, it was on again.
It was absurd. And then all of a sudden, like, that game, yeah, we just watched the second half. It made no sense.
Yeah.
Nothing about that game made any sense. It was so fun. And I decided the next day, because they came out the next day, both on sports radio, on the internet, whatever it was, the game was a sham. Like, it wasn't really, it was theater. What didn't really, like, nobody was playing. I was like, you people are the worst people in the world. Like, you can't find enjoyment in this. What is the matter with you? You all suck. Like, you need to turn inward and examine yourself, because if you couldn't find joy in watching Kobe, yeah, of course, like, were they feeding him the ball for every, yes. Like, who cares about any of that? If you couldn't find joy in that game, you are a broken human being.
Yes, that's right. There's something
100%.
Wrong. You are not a real basketball fan.
No.
That's it.
Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred said that they're going to play, but really? And what's that going to look like? And what does it mean going forward?
Can we talk about Rob Manfred?
We can. Not yet, but we can.
I watched some of the draft, okay? And I have a lot to say about it, but we got to go to break and sell some inventory.
I have a lot to say about that next.
There you go. Thunder.
Yeah, it's fine. Ramona Shelburne, Brian Kamenetsky, 710 ESPN.